Welcome to Friday. Let's cap off the week. I'm Bill Radke. We're on Twitter at KUOW and my Week in Review panel today. I can barely see them through the smoke haze that looks like Erica C. Barnett. Erica, are you there?
I can hear you, Bill. I cannot see you.
The C is for crank.com. Kathy Allen, the C is for Kathy, and consultant, political consultant, welcome.
Yep, thanks.
Chris Vance, C. Chris, chair, former chair of the state Republican Party, still a Republican?
Please don't ask. I'm just not in the mood to talk about it.
You know what? I ask you that every time, and you say barely, and then last week you told Crosscut you're now not sure you're a Republican.
Yeah,
so why didn't you break that news on KUOW?
There's no news quite to break, but okay. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Oh, that sounds intriguing.
Political consultant Kathy Allen's ears go up.
Well, maybe he'll run as a Democrat next time.
No.
Oh, okay. Socialist?
You know, there's a lot of people getting elected out there as independents.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting. A lot of people literally today urging Jeff Flake to run as an independent.
That's so, right.
Now in Seattle, you have to make up a party.
I think that's the most interesting thing going on out there, but we'll see.
Who has central air?
Not me.
You don't even need to look at me, but I live in a 120-year-old house.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Not
I'm
me neither.
10-year-old house.
Chris Vance, central air.
No, we've got a big portable air conditioner. It looks like R2-D2 that takes care of about a third of the house. The rest of the house is miserable.
Oh, does it have a big hose coming out the
yes,
side?
Yes.
Oh, those are so cool.
Yes. And it works in the room it's in, but the rest of the house is awful.
How are you holding up, Kathy?
It's hot. I got up at 5 o'clock this morning, couldn't sleep, so I got up and just sort of said, okay, I'll go outside. And it was wonderful outside. It was like 68 degrees.
And you could stare at the sun because the sunrise was mitigated
actually,
by the smoke.
I've been ignoring all things in garden and plants and so on, and as a result, I thought well, why don't I do this? Why don't I just make myself useful at 7 o'clock in the morning?
There you go. That's some Seattle gumption, right? Resilience. Chris, are you an anti-air condition type? We had that discussion earlier this week. This is the Seattle Times says we have the fewest air-conditioned homes of any U.S. big city except San Francisco, but the percentage of Seattle apartments built with air conditioning has more than quadrupled in the last couple of decades. Maybe that's rising wealth. Maybe it's climate change. Maybe it's people moving here from any place except San Francisco.
Maybe it's just smarter, younger kids moving into
these
them.
Coddled millennials.
You know, it's really...
They're snowflakes, and they're going to melt in August.
I've lived here my whole life, and people love to mock Seattleites for being snow wimps and heat wimps. And it's really not fair because the thing about the snow is every other big city has an army of snowplows, and we don't. And that's why you can't drive in the snow, because no one can drive up and down hills in compact snow and ice. And when it comes to heat, nobody wants to live in a house when it's 95 degrees out, no air conditioning. And it gets to be 95 every once in a while here. We are all of us, we are stupid for not putting air conditioning in our houses. My wife yells at me every summer for this, and we need to get it done.
I got to say, you know, coming from Houston, which is a place where they air condition the indoors, they air condition the outdoors, you start your car 10 minutes early so you can air condition your car.
Mm-hmm.
We used to do that in Alaska.
Be careful what you wish for, because I worked a job in Texas for a couple years where it would be 110 degrees outside, and inside I was wearing two sweaters, a blanket, and still shivering.
Yeah. True.
Well, maybe it's because we have so many elections. Remember, Washington State was actually nominated as the place that has the most number of individual elections in the country.
I hadn't heard
Maybe it's all that hot air.
Yes, it gathers and it collects.
Seattle with all the new parties, maybe.
This is the loss of all the air conditioning. I'm not saying I lose sleep over this. I only lose sleep when it's hot in my bedroom. But this is another Seattle hallmark gone away, which is we live in the cool evergreen forest and it gets hot 3 days a year and we don't do air conditioning. We put up with it. But that's changing. The police in Suquamish said if you leave your kid or pet in the car, quote, "We will not dilly-dally waiting for you to return, nor will we waste time trying to open the doors using our unlock equipment. If the child is sweating or the dog is panting, we're breaking your window instantly, rescuing the innocent and charging you with the maximum offenses allowed by law," end quote.
Well, so much for the de-escalation of police tools.
Smash the window.
A bit melodramatic, but...
It's vivid.
Yeah.
You know, it's a reminder. Here I am talking about it.
Yeah, I read that notice, and it was amazing. I mean, everything written by the government is watered down, yeah. bureaucrat. That was not. That was like blunt English.
And yes. It was,
it's the summer interns. They must be allowed to write. That's
yeah.
a good thing.
Yeah, that's going on their resume. It's a little, I've heard it's a few degrees cooler than it would have been because of all the British Columbia forest fire smoke blowing through. The wind that usually blows it the other way is malfunctioning. And
whatever that is, it doesn't account, though, for the increase in the number of people who immediately are thinking that they're sick. I have to tell you that the increase in the number of people that have decided that, I'm sorry, I can't make this meeting today because my doctor has told me I can't leave the house,
uh-huh.
I think is a bit a tad overrated. And given the fact that several legislators are the ones telling me that, I tend to think they're just taking a vacation.
You're hearing that, huh?
I'm hearing it.
Wow.
Mm.
Yeah, it is. It's a summer Friday, and with all the smoke, I can't possibly work past the end of the show.
I'm thinking about going to a movie after this.
Yeah, you know, let's.
Yeah, I was thinking about, you know what? How about An Inconvenient Truth? Because this new one, I am told, will actually signal out why it is we're staying in an air-conditioned theater as opposed to going out and smelling the British Columbia smoke.
Right. My favorite heat advice so far, sheets in the freezer. That's a good one. I hadn't thought of that. I slept in my freezer last night. Okay, let's on the Week in Review. We have Erica C. Barnett and Kathy Allen and Chris Vance. We're on Twitter at KUOW, and let's talk about our election. City Council, State Legislature, School Board, Port Commission, yes. And in Seattle, 21 candidates were up for mayor, and the winners are Jenny Durkin, who says she will make change.
Whether it's climate change, immigration rights, or whether it's affordability and solving the homeless problem, we will make sure we deal with it responsibly, based on science, and compassionately. And we will make Seattle that city of the future that everybody is welcome in, and everybody has a home in, and everybody knows that Seattle is for them.
Durkin will face the second place candidate in November, and so far, that's Carrie Moon.
But I really want to make sure we're building an inclusive movement, because it's going to take all of us to defeat the establishment candidate.
Defeat the establishment candidate. Whether it's Carrie Moon or Nikita Oliver coming from behind, they'll be calling Jenny Durkin the establishment candidate. Erica, what does that mean?
Well, I think in Seattle, it means that you have backing from developers, which and the business lobby, which Jenny Durkin definitely does.
Why? Why are they backing her?
Well, I mean, Durkin comes from, you know, from a long line of, you know, of people in the development community and from a long line of kind of the Democratic establishment. She worked for Mike Lowry. She worked for President Obama.
They're radical. There you go. That's
well,
establishment.
And I want to also point out one thing that that is really not establishment or, you know, business as usual for any of these candidates, including Jenny Durkin, which is that we haven't elected a woman in 92 years. And I think that that often gets elided in these conversations about, oh, she's just more of the same. When, you know, hundreds of cities, I think it's like 300 cities right now in the U.S. have female mayors. We haven't done it. And that is still radical in Seattle. And that's sad that it's radical. But it's something that I think we need to pause on and think about more than just saying, oh, yay, it's a woman. But ugh, it's that woman.
Kathy Allen, is it sad and radical? Political consultant?
I don't think it's sad and radical. I think what it is, it's finally our turn. Fact is, when it comes to establishment, I have to tell you this true story, and that is Jenny Durkin, whom I have been with in protests against the war in Vietnam, as she was one of the first out women, lesbian woman, who was actually helpful in getting Pride Parade and everything started here. The fact that she was also among the first to actually sign the Let's Protect a Woman's Right to Choose. And she's been involved in every other possible against the war in Vietnam, all these things. And I'm thinking her mom and dad must be turning over in their graves laughing hysterically at her being called establishment, because this woman has been at the top of every, I would say, righteous social cause I've known growing up.
Well, Erica says she has developer money. What's that about?
I think it means that she's got developer money as opposed to Carrie Moon, which has all of her own money that she's thrown in. Well, when you self-fund, it's a different kind of story. Then I suppose you take a look at it and you say, why isn't anybody else supporting you? The fact is that Jenny's money comes from thousands of different people. It comes from anti-developers as well as developers.
Well, and I think, you know, you're talking about all these social causes and of the, you know, at the national level. I think in Seattle.
National? I think they're pretty local.
Sure. Look, I'm not, I worked for an abortion rights group. You know, I'm not saying that they're not, that politics isn't local. But actually my point is that I think Jenny is getting support from people who supported Mayor Ed Murray. And I think what it says that that is considered establishment is that policies, you know, like densification, like HALA, like, you know, like let's like saying, you know, single family zones are actually part of the problem and they're causing a housing shortage in the city. That has become an establishment position. And you see that with the fact that all of the HALA votes have been unanimous. And so the pushback against that, I think, is coming from the left. But it's against, you know, a quote unquote establishment position. That.
And so have you heard Jenny's position regarding HALA?
Of course. Yeah, she supports it. And
yeah.
And that's my point. I think she's going to be a continuation in a lot of ways of the Murray agenda, which is actually very popular. And you see that in Jenny's vote. So I'm agreeing with you by saying that I think that the votes for Jenny, you know, and the fact that she came so far ahead, over 30%, is reflective, you know, A, of the money. She has a lot of money that allowed her to have a lot of reach. But B, I mean, her positions are actually broadly popular.
Chris Vance, is it fair to call Jenny Durkan the establishment candidate in this race?
I don't know. I have to always point out, I don't live in Seattle, but Jenny Durkan's a liberal. And the idea that she would be the moderate, the establishment, whatever, I mean, both parties have become ripped to pieces between battles between the Democrats. It's a battle between liberals versus crazy liberals. And the Republican Party, it's a battle between conservatives versus the insane alt-right. I mean, both parties have been driven so far to the extremes that that's where you are now. Jenny Durkan is a liberal Democrat.
Why does she? I still want to know, why does she have, if she has more developer money, I don't know, and she has the Chamber of Commerce endorsement, why? I just want to know why. What would her policies be? Would be different from probably Carrie Moon, possibly Nikita Oliver?
She's been skeptical about an income tax. She said she wants to, she's fine with going forward with it as a test case, but she doesn't think it's legal. She's a lawyer.
Because it's not.
That's her legal opinion. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't have a legal opinion. But she's also, you know, she's pro-HALA, she's pro-development, and she's pro-housing. And I think that is, you know, that is considered an establishment position. I think she's also, I talked to her and she said she was in favor of the sweeps of homeless encampments. And I think that is also a Murray / establishment position that, you know, that a lot of people, whether you think they're radical lefties or not, I mean, a lot of people disagree with that view.
So they agree on density. Would Durkan charge developers more money than Moon or Oliver?
No, I mean, I don't think so.
Less money. Would she charge developers any? Because I'm hearing about impact fees.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think that she would be less inclined to put taxes and fees on developers because that diminishes the, you know, the likelihood that developers will build housing.
Okay.
And I think the left the position to the left of that is charge them, you know, as much as you want because development is bad for the city and it's causing gentrification. I do not hold that view myself, but I'm just expressing, you know, kind of what I think you're going to hear. In the general election, in that race and in the council.
In many ways, 2016 never ended and probably, it seems like, never will. That election was transformational. This sounds to me like a proxy war between the Bernie forces and the Hillary forces. And again, on the other side, believe me, everything in the Republican Party is how loyal are you not to Donald Trump? It's I think, a sad commentary on where our politics are. Now,
does Washington State have significant Republicans supporting Donald Trump?
Oh, every Republican supports Donald Trump.
Voters also. I mean, I know a few state legislators.
Donald Trump won the Republican primary in Washington State overwhelmingly.
Yeah, voters, I know.
And Republican elected officials are either supporting him or they are complicit in their silence. One or the other.
Complicit. Okay.
One or the other.
I think it would have been a lot more of a proxy war if it had been Jenny versus Mike McGinn, who was the, you know, the sort of prototypical Bernie bro in the race.
Oh, I think Nikita would have made a Bernie versus Hillary kind of case. I don't think that in all of it, I think that in the real truth is that what we saw, based upon what you said about this, is still a holdover from 2016 malaise on both sides. Probably true. What I also see is I see that there's an opportunity here to be able to sort of talk a little bit about the fact that we broke three records this week. One is in the total number of women running, the total number of women winning, and the total number of winning who are now situated to be running for top mayoral spots. That's never happened before. And more importantly, we have had not just 1 or 2 percentage point more women of color. We've had like 4% more women of color that not only ran, but actually have won and are going on to the actual general election, including the biggest of all, a national story, is the story in the 45th, where we have 2 women of color who have never run before. And the fact is that it's become national news based on the fact that this is happening now in this town of ours that never could get a woman, not for 90 years in terms of the mayor's office. The fact is, all of the burbs are just climbing with more women running and more women winning than we've ever seen.
I want the listener to know, yes, talking about the 45th Senate, 45th District, State Senate on the east side, Monica Dhingra leading Republican Jin Young Lee England by
9.2%.
51-42. Right.
But before we get there, I get to actually talk about my town for a moment. We have a hot mayor's race in Auburn, which is very actually consequential. And again, it is 2 women running against each other. So I agree with Kathy. This is it's great, and it's almost to me, it's becoming so common that women are winning these races. It's becoming less and less a story, which is good. That's the way it should be. We should be just used to this idea by now.
I think I just want to respond real quickly and kind of on that point. I think the reason Nikita Oliver is less of a Bernie proxy is because she's a woman of color, a woman and a woman of color. Because I think that the issue that, you know, that I had with the Bernie people during that election was that they, you know, sort of insisted that if we solve the economic problems, we'll solve all the racial problems and all the gender problems in our society. And it'll just kind of trickle down to people of color and to women, and everything will be better and happy for everybody. And we don't need to talk about race, and we don't need to talk about gender. Nikita Oliver has centered that part of her, you know, of herself and her individual experience and, you know, the experience of people of color and women as part of her campaign. So I think that she would have continued to do that in a way that I think would actually have been a more interesting race than, say, Mike McGinn versus Jenny.
I think the people that she attracted were very much Bernie people. And actually, the energy and excitement that she had, I thought, was very, very much indicative of Bernie's.
One more City of Seattle question before we move on. How will supporters of, if it's Carrie Moon, let's say, we could flip this, could be Oliver or Moon, but how would supporters of the other candidates, Oliver, Farrell, Hasegawa, McGinn, how enthusiastically would they work for Carrie Moon if she's the other candidate?
Depends. I have to say that in this case, I take a look at it. Don't think that any time you have a candidate who loses endorse one of the 2 winners, that all of the people, even some of the people, end up following him or her.
Exactly.
Doesn't happen.
It's about money, organizing, doorbelling, turning out to vote, right? An endorsement is the minimum.
Yep. It's personal. People will take this very personal.
Yeah.
So it's not the same. And so I don't think it really matters, other than I'm still anxious to find out who are those 6% that voted for Mike McGinn and why are they living here?
I could look at this 2 ways. One is, you know, Durkin did better than everybody else in the ballot by a wide margin. She's going to have more money, more endorsements, better resume, blah, all that stuff, and make a case that she's a colossus that's going to win easily. On the other hand, she really did a lot of advertising and got a lot of campaigning out there, and 70% of the voters did not vote for her.
That's the question.
So I could also make the case this is going to be really close. I honestly don't know, and I'd love to see some polling numbers.
And Carrie Moon has the ability to self-finance, you know, out the hilt. I mean, if she wants to pay for her own advertising, that's what she did in the primary. I think she's going to keep doing it in the general.
And she's hired people who know what they're doing.
Yeah, she's hired Moxie Media, which, you know, I kind of discounted when I found out that they were backing this campaign, because it just seemed to me like this was a cash cow a little bit for them. But boy, was I wrong. So apologies to them, because honestly, I mean, they've done a really good job of getting Carrie's name out there. And, you know, I mean, I don't know how many you don't vote in Seattle, Chris, but I mean, I got so much mail from Carrie, and, you know, and I don't know if anybody looks at mail anymore, but
yes,
if that's an
do.
Indication.
Of course they do.
Last question on elections. Why did the King County Arts and Culture Tax, with no organized opposition, why did it lose by 10 percentage points?
Well, it isn't losing by 10 percentage points. Well,
oh.
The gap is closed. It's down to 52.75. Well, it's losing because I think, especially in the suburbs, we're hitting a point of real tax fatigue here. It's one levy after another. A lot of these suburban areas passed some of the biggest school levies and school bonds last year they ever have. And people looked at this and said, my taxes, my property taxes are just way too high, and voted no. It's really simple.
Is it passing in Seattle? Do we know?
I actually
haven't
checked.
Just barely. And actually, with the it's passing more in Seattle, the more the absentee ballots come in, those last-minute ones come in. I have to say that I think that what we've found is that there really is something that liberal progressive Democrats will vote against when it comes to money. And I think that this happened.
And it's Arts for Children.
Arts for Children. It had the best story. It had good people working it. Bill Nye, the science guy, all these guys doing good stuff. And I thought to myself, gosh, this is going to have to be a positive. We're all in a good mood. It's the summer. Just the Mariners aren't winning. But other than that, things are going in the right direction. So all of these things made me think it was going to pass. However, even I paused for a nanosecond. I actually voted for it, but I paused because I thought, gosh, you know, what's coming in the fall?
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it. I kept thinking, wait a minute, I know right now off the top of my head three other issues I'm going to be spending money on, and my taxes are already they've actually changed my mortgage payment twice based upon the fact that there's an increase that's expected based on my property tax.
But I think that what you're talking about right now speaks to, you know, the primary electorate, which is that they're the people that have mortgages and pay property taxes as opposed to the,
sales.
You know, well, yeah, as opposed to the renters, I mean, who make up the majority of Seattle now, not the suburban areas. But I mean, I think it's kind of a part. It's a fallacy of thinking that something that doesn't directly benefit you or your children or any children, you know, because you don't know any impoverished families. You know, I think that can lead to people voting against it and thinking that arts are a frivolity, or that, you know, kids don't really need that. They
right.
really need school lunches. They really need the things that, you know, that people who are in poverty need at the, you know, at the basic desperation level. And, you know, and I think that's a shame. And maybe they should have gone in the general. Maybe they would have done a better job.
We are in this fix because of Tim Eymann's idiotic 1% property tax cap has gutted King County's general fund. When I was in the county council, we paid for things like this out of the general fund, which was growing much faster. The 1% property tax cap has really hurt King County. King County has turned to special levies to fund things. But now it's gone too far and too many. Now they've put the Veterans and Human Services levy on the ballot, which we must have, but they chose to double it. So it's a huge tax increase. The legislature just passed a massive.
It's not actually. I mean, money wise, it's not. It's $9. I mean,
it's twice the size it was.
Yes, it's twice the size. It's 10 cents as opposed to 5 cents.
Yeah. So it's and.
So to say that, I mean, if you're looking at your actual property taxes.
And coming on that, the
legislature
just raised property taxes dramatically to fund.
Yes.
McCleary. There is a limit to how many times people are going to say yes, and we need to find better ways to fund government services in this region rather than just using the property tax levy as an ATM.
Why? Chris Vance is going to become a Democrat and support an income tax.
Can we put you on record, you know, supporting the income tax?
I'm just sitting
He's nodding over there.
I'm just sitting here. But I do hope we will talk about the most important election that happened this week, and that is the 45th district. It appears it's not over yet, but it appears very likely the Democrats are going to win that seat, take the state Senate, and that is going to send seismic shockwaves through Washington state politics.
What's the biggest thing that will happen differently if the Democrats have majority in the Senate as well as the House and governor?
They will go back and revisit the big tax and spending deal the legislature just did and probably make a lot of changes. But longer term, the Republican Party is on the road to extinction in King County. If they lose this seat, they're down to only 4 House members and senators total in all of King County. They lost 3 seats in the last election. They'll have to defend some very vulnerable seats in the next election. The Republican Party is becoming extinct in the King County suburbs. And if that happens, it is mathematically impossible for Republicans to ever have majorities in the House and Senate. The Republican Party is on the road that you have the Republican Party in the rest of the West Coast, which is irrelevance.
I don't know. I wish it were to be. I wish it were that.
You're not buying the Jeremiah ad?
No. Unfortunately, what's happening is we're seeing actually an outmigration of more affluent people of color from Seattle and the closeness here over to the east side. However, we're seeing just as much in terms of low income moving south that is indeed much more Republican leaning. We've seen areas such as Kent, Auburn, Federal Way, all of these areas are actually not nearly as progressive as they used to be. Mm-hmm. Whereas we see, I have to say that you're right in terms of the 45th is definitely folks moving there that are formerly from more urban areas, not just Seattle, and they are lean Democrat, where it used to be Republican mm-hmm. swing 3 years ago.
Okay, this is can we pause on political talk? That's big, and there's much more on The Week in Review with Kathy Allen and Chris Vance and Erica C. Barnett. We're on Twitter at KUOW. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Back to KUOW's Week in Review. We're on Twitter at KUOW. Erica C. Barnett, Chris Vance, Kathy Allen. I'm Bill Radke. Do Americans still want tired, poor, huddled masses? This week, President Trump called for a big change in the way the U.S. takes in immigrants. Right now, the U.S. issues green cards, partly based on family connections. Trump and his Republican Senate sponsors want to go to a so-called merit-based system.
This competitive application process will favor applicants who can speak English, financially support themselves and their families, and demonstrate skills that will contribute to our economy. The RAISE Act prevents new migrants and new immigrants from collecting welfare and protects U.S. workers from being displaced.
English, education, skills, money, a high-paying job offer. This is not what the poem in the Statue of Liberty got at, as CNN's Jim Acosta told White House policy advisor Stephen Miller.
What you're proposing, or what the president's proposing here, does not sound like it's in keeping with American tradition when it comes to immigration. The Statue of Liberty says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, yearning to breathe free. It doesn't say anything about speaking English or being able to be a computer programmer. Aren't you trying to change what it means to be an immigrant coming into this country if you're telling them you have to speak English? Can't people learn how to speak English when they get here?
Well, first of all, right now it's a requirement that to be naturalized you have to speak English. So the notion that speaking English wouldn't be a part of our immigration systems would be actually very ahistorical. Secondly, I don't want to get off into a whole thing about history here, but the Statue of Liberty is a symbol of liberty enlightening the world. It's a symbol of American liberty lighting the world. The poem that you're referring to that was added later is not actually part of the original Statue of Liberty, but more fundamentally, Jim, let me ask you a question.
That sounds like some National Park revisionism.
No, what I'm asking you is
the Statue of Liberty has always been a beacon of hope to the world for people to send
people
to this country.
Jim,
and they're not always going to speak English, Stephen.
Jim,
they're not always going to be highly skilled. They're not always going to be
Jim, I appreciate your speech. Jim, I appreciate your speech. So let's talk about this.
And it went on from there. Chris Vance, since U.S. law is obviously not dictated by statues any more than it's dictated by commandments on stone tablets, how much should a 130-year-old poem inspire our immigration policy?
Well, okay, you can talk about the poem, but let's talk about the policy. I mean, the Trump administration and its allies in the Senate want to cut legal immigration in half. All this stuff about skills-based and all that other stuff is just how they want to do it. But they're very open, and the objective is fewer immigrants. And this is part of the alt-right nationalist agenda that has taken over the Republican Party. It is absolutely contrary to traditional free market Republican policies. Go back and listen to Ronald Reagan's speech about the shining city on a hill and how it'd be open to everyone. And it just infuriates me in every way. They are redefining conservatism instead of being about things like freedom and opportunity and economic growth. It's about isolationism and nationalism and xenophobia, and they're doing it on purpose. I mean, Trump is too dumb maybe to understand this ideology, but people like Miller and Bannon know exactly what they're doing. And also, finally, it is not based on any facts or research. Every economic study shows that increased levels of immigration grow your economy. This is a myth that immigrants come in and take jobs away from Americans and drive down wages. more immigration, I mean, you don't want uncontrolled immigration, but more immigration grows the economy, just like free trade does. It's just, it is just infuriating how awful and cruel this policy is.
I do want
former Republican Party Chair Chris Vance.
Former.
I do want to talk about the poem because I think that, you know, Stephen Miller was, you know, if not intentionally, I think intentionally parroting a white supremacist talking point about that poem, which is that it was written by a Jewish communist slash socialist who didn't represent American values. That's something that Richard Spencer says, Stormfront.
But he didn't talk about her being Jewish. Is it fair to heap that on Stephen Miller?
I do think it is. Because
I think it's fair, too.
I think that he has parroted anti-Semitic talking points since the very beginning, since he was, you know, in high school, in fact, but if you want to go all the way back. But the fact that he then went on to refer to Jim Acosta, the CNN reporter's cosmopolitan bias, which, again, is code for Jewish elites. An elite, of course, is itself like a bit of a code. So I do think that actually, yeah, it does matter that he's doing these kind of dog whistles that are barely dog whistles to the alt-right, to the Stormfronts and the neo-Nazis of the world or of America, is really important, and it should be called out.
Yes. Jeff Greenfield wrote a great piece this week talking about this phrase, the cosmopolitan bias. It goes back to Stalin. Attacking, you know, Russian Jews. It is a talking point of the nationalist alt-right, which is where Miller comes from, who, by the way, used to be the immigration expert to Jeff Sessions when he was in the Senate.
Kathy Allen, I hear progressives praise Canada for taking in so many immigrants. Do you fault Canada for using a so-called merit-based system that Trump wants to emulate?
No. In fact, I think that what he's doing is he's taking what the Canadians have done and he's actually just bifurcating it all over the place because it's not what they have. Indeed, having worked in Canada, I work with a number of political parties in Canada and progressive, of course. And the fact is that what they've done is interpreted. So it is an inclusive policy. It's very much one that actually starts looking at how is it that you actually address people so that you're not necessarily using race as a basis for anything, quotas or not. And the other part is that they don't use it politically strategic. They don't use this. This, to me, as a political consultant, was Trump and the gang around him looking at this and saying, geez, we're definitely losing this Game of Thrones right now, because what's happening is that we're out of luck when it comes to Obamacare. We're out of luck when it comes to any budget, nothing to do with taxes in this. He's been in office for now close to 8 months. And guess what? Nothing's done that he's supposed to do. So what you do is you start force feeding the actual core of the ultra right, the alt right, and just say, OK, I'm going to show them that I'm still there for them. This is a rally of your base so your base doesn't get disillusioned and start fragmenting,
okay,
and running away.
Well, how big is the base? Republican Chris Vance, would this immigration change pass? It's got a couple of Senate Republican sponsors. Would this pass Congress?
No, it's not going to pass this year now.
Why not?
Because, first of all,
Republicans have both houses in the presidency.
But they need 60 votes to get it through the Senate, and the Democrats would filibuster it. And there's still a lot of traditional moderates, maybe even just traditional conservative Republicans in Congress that'll stop this. But again, what's dangerous is you have to look at the long term. The alt-right, nationalist, isolationist, anti-trade wing of the party, which has been there forever, Pat Buchanan, the Know-Nothings, the Birchers, they've been around forever. But now they control one of our two major political parties. That never used to be the case. And long-term, if this continues, you know, Trump may not get these policies in. But what if we keep electing people like Trump? And because of the Electoral College and the way districts are drawn, that Republicans keep having majorities, this is where we're drifting. It's not going to happen quickly, but it should scare everyone that this sort of ideology has taken over the party of Abraham Lincoln and Ronald Reagan.
Well, I would say it hasn't been the party of Abraham Lincoln for a long time.
On immigration, it has.
But I also, you know, I think it is just like the height of, it's not hypocrisy, but just the height of comedy for Donald Trump to be talking about having a merit-based system for, you know, this wannabe oligarch who got the presidency because he's famous on TV to talk about wanting everything to be merit-based in our country when he would never have gotten anywhere on merit. And Also, by the way, can we apply fluent English requirements to Donald Trump? Because the man, I mean, can't compose a sentence in writing or in speech. So if we want to apply the same standards to the presidency that he wants to apply to immigrants, then I'd say all for it.
Hear, hear. That's a good one.
Leaving the Statue of Liberty. So, by the way, Stephen Miller said the Statue of Liberty is not a symbol of welcoming. It's a symbol of liberty, lighting the world. It's right there in the name Liberty. I don't like anyone telling me what a symbol means, and I have the same feeling. A border wall with Mexico is not a symbol of sovereignty and the rule of law. It's also not a symbol of hatred and division. It's anything I want it to symbolize, and I can figure that out myself. So anytime someone tells you what a symbol, something is a symbol of, and they're going to tell you about it now, you can tune them out. Fair?
You'd make the actual merit test.
Okay. Before we leave the White House, Chris, here's a chance to be a Republican.
Hmm.
The Wall Street...
One last time.
The Wall Street Journal broke the news that the special counsel looking into Russian election meddling is using grand juries, which means this is not just an intelligence investigation. This is a criminal investigation.
Right.
You got a problem with that?
Heck no. I mean, and this is, again, is not news. The order that appointed Mueller made it clear this is a criminal investigation and that he had broad authority to go wherever the investigation took him. The rumors about grand jury being impaneled have been out there for a few weeks. It takes a while for the mainstream media to catch up. But the idea that this is a counterintelligence operation, that has not been true for months. And this is incredibly serious. And again, looking down the road, I believe at some point Donald Trump is going to have to choose whether he allows some members of his family and his team to be indicted, because that seems inevitable, or himself, or try and roll the dice and fire Robert Mueller. And if he fires a special counsel and Congress doesn't immediately do something to protect Mueller, then we'll see if people are willing to really march in the streets, because then our democracy is really threatened.
There's another option, which is that he could just start pardoning everybody. And I mean, I think that also seems, I mean, that seems equally likely as firing Mueller at this point. But, you know, I mean, with Donald Trump, I mean, you really are just like picking a random card out of the deck on any given day.
It's true. And I also was thinking that in all of this, I was listening to Trump with his tirade in regards to the sanctions bill. And there was a part of me that thought, you know what? He's protesting too much, that this is part of probably what he feels is important for him to sound like he's really against all these sanctions, when actually, you know, if you took a look at these sanctions, Washington State, among other things, benefited handily based upon some of the changes that were made for export and import of natural resources. I mean, the oil companies, among others, were among the biggest winners in this document. There were many things changed that were actually going to be very helpful to the extraction as well as the shipment of natural resources. So I think that he was covering up again.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, there's so many people pay sort of attention to this and sort of not. And there's such a flood of information. And sometimes when there's too much information, you don't see it. But if you just I don't have any knowledge other than reading vociferously everything I can about this. And there's all sorts of evidence of collusion. There's all sorts of evidence of money laundering. The special prosecutor is looking closely at Trump's financial records. You have Roger Stone communicating on Twitter with Guccifer, which was one of the people that leaked the stuff. You've got multiple contacts between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. What do you think they're talking about? Soccer or vodka? I mean, they were colluding.
They're talking about bouncing Russian babies.
And they were talking about how many more, you know, buildings can Trump build over there.
And his entire business has been based upon Russian investment for many years since the American banks stopped loaning him money. We all get impatient. We want this to happen tomorrow. My wife's like, why hasn't everything happened?
We want what to happen tomorrow?
Him being impeached or indictments or something big. It's going to take some time, but there's going to come a day when Robert Mueller is going to step in front of cameras and announce what he's found. And it's going to be big. I'd be shocked if it isn't. And that is when we could face a full-on constitutional crisis at that point if Republicans are hell-bent on defending the First Family and the Royal Family.
Okay, should we leave it with the name Guccifer? Because I enjoyed that. We are nearing the end of KOW's Week in Review. I have a couple more things to talk about, though. You've got to dial 10 digits now because there's a new area code coming starting this month. And there's also marauding, sword-wielding, rum-guzzling, merrymakers, troublemakers, just running rampant in Seattle right now.
Commonly referred to as pirates.
Thank you. Thank you. Coming up on the Week in Review, what to do with the yo-ho-hos. Stay tuned. Kathy Allen and Chris Vance and Erica C. Barnett. I'm Bill Radke. We're all bringing you KOW's Week in Review. Coming rounding the final turn here, we should introduce ourselves, I guess. I'm Bill, 206. Kathy, 206.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Erica?
I don't really remember my number anymore.
Yeah, who knows anymore, right? Chris Vance, 253?
253.
253, straight out of Auburn. Your Auburn neighbors can no longer get you by dialing just seven numbers, right? As of this week, in Western Washington, you've got to dial all 10 digits or you'll be told,
to complete this call, you must first dial a 1 or 0 plus the area code and phone number. Please hang up and try your call again.
Where was the
Let me just tell you that I got caught a couple times, and I can only tell you that the noise that they're booming out you at you first, which is this, like, you know, no, you did this wrong. It's sort of like in all of it, I'm like, oh gosh, is that already started?
Right.
But
yes,
yeah,
it
I
has.
I got caught a couple times already.
Otherwise, you could just be dialing someone, and it's on speakerphone while you're working, and if you don't have the grating tone, you might just pick up the phone and think you reached your party.
Can someone explain to me what dialing is?
Yeah.
I'm being facetious, but yeah, I'm looking through my phone now and, you know, I've got hundreds of numbers in here, anybody I could ever need to call.
Yes.
I don't know what area code they're in. I mean, it just seems...
That's the not flip phone having... I guess even flip phones have probably favorites and contacts. And
yeah, I mean, like I think, you know, area codes, like, the concept of dialing someone's number every time you pick up the giant landline phone, I mean, is becoming pretty archaic.
Well, actually, I should say that as somebody who has on occasion, I know people who have done opposition research, all I could say is that first three numbers used to say, oh, so he lived in Portland for a while. Aha. Or, oh, California. They're here from California. Or, oh, they just got out of college. They must be a young intern. We've used it as an information. It just sort of gives you like a clue. Really what it means now is, where did they find the cheapest price, whatever zip code that was.
Right. This is happening because we're getting a new area code here starting this month. How would you feel about being assigned the new 564? They're not going to steal your area code, but 564?
I wouldn't take it.
What? Why?
I'd be protesting.
Why? What's wrong with 564? They don't even exist yet, and you don't like them.
206 sounds more elite, more cool.
More elite.
More educated.
More cosmopolitan.
Yeah, more Cosmo.
Oh, okay, more Cosmo. More cred, yeah. Elite in certain circles.
Actually, I don't want to have to learn more numbers. I'm having a hard enough time with passwords and trying to remember which one is this, you know, that I'm supposed to be using.
I mean, I think it speaks to the fact that we're becoming, this is happening everywhere, but everybody is more mobile. A lot of people don't change their phone numbers.
Right.
I mean, I don't know where a lot of people, if I get a call from Utah or, you know, Kansas, I mean, I generally will pick it up because it could be somebody who's like, you know, right across the street.
True.
It means so little now that, and look, I mean, I grew up in a time of, you know, of dial telephones, you know, I was being a little bit facetious, but you know, just you move with the times and the nostalgia for an area code is something that, you know, I also grew up in Houston and we had three area codes when I was growing up and it didn't signify anything.
I don't like the 564 because it's, could they have chosen a more hard to remember group of three numbers? Like, why couldn't they have? This is the state. The state could have come up with, there's no 123. We could take 123. 666 is available.
Well, 123 is a problem because that's the first three numbers that everybody uses for their security code for their home alarm.
Uh-huh, right. By the way, I checked out before I said 666 is available. I actually looked it up. It did used to be an area code in Louisiana. They had a 666 area code, and obviously because some Christians call that the mark of the beast, those Louisianans had something I had never heard of. They had a case of
hexocacy, hexaconda,
the fear of the number 666 is what I just said it was.
Bill, I came up with a mnemonic for you. It spells J-O-G. Jog.
Oh, jog. That's then. So if you have 564, just think of how what you can't do because it's too smoky and hot outside right now. Finally, on the week in review, the people of Louisiana decided to ditch an area code that was part of its history. And that's what some people want to do with the hard drinking, women kissing seafare pirates.
Yo ho! Yo ho! Yo ho! Ho ho ho! We're the seafare pirates and a scurvy bunch, are we? We drink our ale and chase our quail and never put out to sea.
We drink our ale and chase our quail?
Mm-hmm.
Were the early pirates small game hunters? What does that mean?
I don't think so.
I'd rather
not
say.
That was another one of these sexist comments regarding women.
Oh, was that a reference to chasing? Okay. By the way, in case you're new here, Seafare, this is our annual summer party. It's why fighter jets are screaming over Lake Washington right about now. Seattle Times reports the pirates are no longer welcome at some Seattle institutions like the Seattle Aquarium because some of them get drunk and rowdy and drink their ale and chase their quail and kiss women who didn't ask to be kissed. And should we ditch the pirates altogether since they are robbers with rum and swords?
So I've lived here my whole life, and I'm 55 years old now, and Seattle has changed so much. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, physically, the place is just all bigger. Seattle used to be a small town, and Seafare used to be a big deal. And I remember, if you were a sports fan, we had two things, Husky football and hydroplanes. And the hydroplane races were a big deal. They were on all day on all three channels.
I've talked to multiple people this week who used to pull hydro boats behind their bicycle. You two?
Oh, me. And you were either a Pan Pac a fan or an Atlas fan or a Budweiser fan, and you knew all the drivers and you went to the time trials, and it was a Seattle thing. And it goes all the way back to when you had Boeing engineers competing against automotive engineers from Detroit, and the Seattle to Detroit rivalry and hydro. Now nobody cares about hydro.
Seattle guy thing or Seattle everybody?
Everybody.
I don't know. I think it was
Everybody. And the Pirates, you'd go and you'd watch the Pirates come in at Alki, and Seattle is unfortunately sort of outgrown Seafare. They just have, and I think it's sad, but I don't know. There's probably there. I don't know what to say about it. I mean, it's the Pirates still. They show up at every parade out in for all the different Seafare parades. But it is just weird to me that how much Seattle has changed and is outgrowing the things that
I don't think
that
so.
We grew up with.
I think you're crazy. I think that Seafare is, for all intents and purposes, now that they no longer kiss women on the lips that didn't ask them to, the fact and trick them into it, I think that they're doing just fine.
What about the cheek? Not okay?
Actually, not okay. Okay. I think that they are among those who actually figured that out. And I also know several of those pirates are actually guys who don't drink. They just act drunk all the time. But not unlike many men we know. In all of this, what I know is that there's an opportunity here. I think that they've grown up too. For example, if you watch the Seafare Parade, it's now two-thirds folks of color, all different kinds of kind of generational at the same time. It's international. I kind of think it's kind of grown with us. And so I think I like it more now because it isn't just about guys running around getting drunk.
Wait, you said that, but I read and I've never been to Seafare, so maybe
you've never been to any Seafare events anywhere.
I've watched the Blue Angels from people's houses, mm-hmm. but yeah, no. I mean, it's like listening to people talk about, you know, how great movies used to be, and then you watch a movie from the 30s and the pacing is so slow. And it's just like
Casablanca is just awful. Yeah.
I mean, it you know, people used to entertain themselves in different ways,
right.
And now we have more options, and I'm sure, you know, in 50 years people are going to be like, oh my god, Xbox, like what, like that sounds it's so boring, it's so slow paced. So I've never been to Seafare, but in the stories that came out this week, weren't they saying that, you know, a woman got kissed on the lips forcibly and like had her lips split just like a couple years ago? Yeah. So, I mean, so I'm I would not say this is a thing of the past.
Oh, I think it has been. I think there's actually a policy now that the guys are not supposed to do this. I mean, it's a policy called against the law, in terms of, in some of these cases, this is actual not just aggressive behavior. This is actually the kind of thing one could file an action against.
Yeah, the Pirates, speaking about them specifically, what made the Pirates cool was there what they always were sort of a little dangerous. They'd be the ones in the parade that set off the cannon that scared everybody. They had muskets and stuff. They with blanks, of course. Little kids were always like, do I want to go talk to that guy or is he scary? You know, and that's what the Pirates were.
I grew up shooting a gun. I would not give a gun to my child now. I mean, I think some things have changed for the better, and maybe the Pirates are one of the things that needs to continue to change for the better.
Change is going to happen. There's nothing you can do about it. It's just having lived here my whole life, it is weird to see how much this place has changed.
This might mark me as old. I'm going to be I was last year, I will be again this Seafair Sunday on the water because I got invited by lovely people and I have fun with them. I love a drink too. I love to drink, but not in a boat, not in a vehicle. Mm-hmm. Unless you're sadly addicted, why is it so important to have alcohol on Lake Washington? Well, I don't know.
Seafairy was, the races were a giant party. Hundreds of thousands of people.
But I can party without alcohol.
I know, but it was just, all I could tell you was a Seattle thing. It really was.
And why?
I also came from here from Texas where, you know, we used to have, and maybe still do, drive-through liquor stores. And you could have an open container in your car. And I'm not nostalgic for that. I think it was really dangerous. And so, I don't know, do I want people boating all over Lake Washington, you know, completely ripped? No. I'm not going to be out there. But I just think there are some traditions that, you know, we can get nostalgic about them. But then if you kind of stop squinting at it and you look at it for a second, it's like, oh, yeah, maybe that wasn't so great.
Yeah. And the truth is it was a thing because there wasn't anything else. Uh-huh. I mean, really what? Seattle was much smaller, farther from everywhere else, much more provincial. And if you're a sports fan, you're going to put your effort somewhere. And we didn't have the Mariners, the Seahawks. There were really two things, minor league baseball, but you had the Huskies and you had hydroplane racing. And so you had a lot of people who were really knowledgeable about hydroplane racing.
I think that the hydroplanes, they're too noisy and they're very much an in kind of thing. But for people who love them, if they want to spend all of their time getting out of the rest of Seattle so they can crowd onto one little beach, fine with me. I'll go do other things. Mm-hmm. However, I like the Blue Angels still. I like everything else.
You know what? It's time for us to go. It's political consultant Kathy Allen at the C is for crank.com. Erica C. Barnett, former state Republican Party chair, still a Republican.
I'm shaking my head.
But shaking his head. Chris Vance. I'm Bill Radke. It's about to get even louder in this town with the Blue Angels. Thanks for tuning in. And we'll see you next week. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ho, 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 we're seafair pirates and a scurvy bunch are we.